Senator Pogerbiller.
Mr. President, I move further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with. The sergeant at arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Reverend Paul Rogers from Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Minneapolis.
Let us pray. For many in this chamber, O God, these are days full of preparation for major occasions in our most common religious traditions, Passover and Easter. But all among us here share the struggles of passing time and of our times. Legislative committees face deadlines. The days left in this session are fleeting. The budget deficit seems to defy any really good solution. Too many of our citizens have lost their work, their homes, and their dreams. But now in the coming days, these dedicated women and men will have a break from meetings and deliberations. We pray that the great promises of our faith traditions could in some ways, even in small ways, be realized for all alike. Bless the senators and all staff members. Let them know some moments of deliverance from the stress of their work. When they return to their duties here in St. Paul, let them come with renewed spirits, refreshed minds, and recharged energies to meet the tasks at hand. Amen.
Amen. Thank you very much. Happy Easter. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzel, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Phoebe, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Coring, Kubley, Langseth, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Bois, Murphy, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Perso, Pogemiller, Pretner Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vanderveer, Vickerman, Wieger.
Quorum is present. First order of business is messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate files. Herewith returned, Senate file numbers 1197 and 1329, signed Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House. And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House file. Herewith transmitted, House File 855, a bill for enacting a capital improvements, authorizing spending to acquire and better public land and buildings and other improvements of a capital nature with certain conditions, signed Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Next order of business is first reading of House bills. There, Senator Pogemiller, you wish to lay that bill on the table?
Mr. President, I move that the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
Excuse me, House File 855, I believe.
That's Senator Langseth. I move House File 855 be laid on the table.
On the motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Okay, now Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that committee
reports of committees.
I move that the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next order of business is second reading of Senate bills. There are three today, and they're printed on the agenda. Without objection, second reading of Senate bills. The next order of business is introduction and first reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's agenda. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills. There are next order of business, motions and resolutions. There are two authors' motions on today's agenda. Without objection, we'll take them as one motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Paul Miller, you wish to break for recess?
I think we'll take a recess, Mr. President. So, Mr. President, I'd move a recess to call the chair. We're talking about half hour, 40 minutes, and the majority caucus will gather in the retiring room, and I'd yield to Senator Senjum.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, Senate Republicans in room 112.
Senator renews his motion for a brief for recess. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senate stands in recess. We'll come to order. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, it's the intent, I'd like to special order Senate File 1328, which is the education bill, and I believe I'd like to put a call on for the duration of the consideration.
Senate is under call.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with, the Sergeant Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Senator and Mr. Pogemiller. President, I'd like to yield to Senator Stump for Senate File 1328.
Did you designate this as special orders?
I did, Mr. President.
Okay.
And Senate File 1328 designated as special order.
Okay. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. Today is the education's turn to take the stage, and before we start talking about the education bill, I think it would be very appropriate to talk a little bit about the importance of education in the state of Minnesota and thank all of those people who are involved. First of all, the 1.3 million learners that we have in the state of Minnesota They range from adults all the way down to very young children. You know, I think all of us have a desire that they succeed and have a great life and a great future. I think it's appropriate also to thank the many teachers and administrators and staff people across the state. They literally run into the tens and tens of thousands of people that work every day with our children and create good learning environments and make our schools actually run. And I also want to thank all of those elected board members out there. Quite often I've thought, and I'm not sure if I would even want to run for election on a school board, because it's a very difficult job, one that today becomes probably has more difficult decisions that they make than ever before. And then also I think all of us would want to thank the taxpayers who help fund our schools and keep them going and create a state that's probably second to none. We always seem to be ranking at the very near the top and sometimes at the top in a lot of different indicators. This is the Omnibus Education Finance Bill. This bill has many education-related provisions to improve the quality of our education, our children's education. It also enhances the delivery of how they learn, and it expects greater accountability and pushes change as we move forward. This bill expects more from our education system, and it gives them less resources to carry that out. Since this is the first budget balancing bill that we're dealing with this session, I want to remind my colleagues that this is probably the greatest challenge that we face this session, and that is to balance the state's budget. By the time we finish this session in May, if it is in May, many of us will better understand how difficult this challenge really is. Before I actually get into the description of the different runs that we have, the financing, and also the actual language of the bill, I want to take the opportunity on behalf of all of my colleagues and members to thank the members of the Education Committee. I am very proud to serve as their chair, and I think the level of debate and discussion in that Education Committee equals none. And I want, this goes totally across the party lines. I think that we have had such a great opportunity to discuss a lot of issues in there and come to some real good solutions. I also want to take the opportunity to thank the staff who we so much depend on and who come up with a lot of ideas and suggestions to help us move us forward. Members, there are several pieces of information that I'd like to point out. I wish I would have put a letter on top of each one, because there sometimes it's hard to follow what run or what piece of information we're working off of. And then what I'd like to do is I do have two technical amendments that I would offer, but I think what we'll do is go through the proposal and then offer the technical amendments. The first piece of information that I'll point out and have you look at, if you haven't already, is up in the upper left-hand corner. It's called the appropriations tracking sheet, and it's a 8.5 by 14 vertical sheet. And this appropriations tracking sheet makes points out several provisions. It definitely is not containing the volume of changes that we would normally see in an education bill, primarily because this bill does reduce the budget. There were limited resources to put into new programs, although we did find some resources to do that. But that appropriations tracking sheet lays out several items that I'll point out. And when you look on the left-hand column, has the general education is the one that relates to the primary funding that we do in our education system. There you will see that a list of the programs that we deal with. The changes are primarily in the center of the page. Difference Senate February forecast and difference Senate versus governor. Those changes are the ones that you can go down and see how we impact or change education in the different programs. In the education, general education area, you'll see that there is a change on line 7 relating to QCOMP. That change, I can assure you that there are no changes to the QCOMP program in this proposal. In terms of limiting the QCOMP program, the existing program, or in the administration of it. There are a couple of differences, as you will see. The governor had proposed to expand that program, and in the past what we have done in the, I believe the last three budget bills, we have tried to recapture any over forecasted amount of money in that program and used it to for some other purpose. In this proposal, you'll see that the language a little bit later on says that the Department of Education could use that forecasted overage to expand the QCOMP program primarily to those districts that currently would like to get in but cannot for one or other reasons. As you look at the list on Senate or difference between the Senate and the February forecast, you will also see that there are provision on line 10 and 11. And Senator Senjum and Senator Sparks last year had a provision relating to wind energy and how that is dealt with. In the past, or under current law, school districts that derive revenues off of wind generation really end up not being any better off. They actually have a subtraction from their aid in that area. Under this proposal, you'll see that half of that revenue generated from wind energy will be allowed to be kept by the district, and the other half will go into the school trust fund. And that's a change, I think, encouragement for those districts to have wind generation in their school district. We also have a program that was part of the governor's package, the Pay for Progress. Oh, I take that back. I guess that's in our, under the next heading. Under the programs that relate to, or new programs, the consolidated levy, which was also a part of the previous budget bills, takes and consolidates three existing levies that we have, the equity levy, the transition levy, and the debt service levy, puts those together and then creates a new consolidated levy. Without an increase in the levy, but with a consolidation of that levy to generate stability and fairness across the districts. A number of the programs that we ended up adopting in this bill will be touched on by some of the authors of the legislation. The Summer of Success on Line 60, that was a provision that was in the governor's language, trying to narrow the learning education gap that currently exists, and several other programs, the Minnesota Virtual Education Program, and the Math and Science Teacher Centers. On the third page, you will see under lines 224 that the reductions that we had to achieve as a target were $972 million. Of that amounts to 7%. Of that amount, we were able to offset with federal funds $519 million. So from a 7% reduction, that went down to a 3.3% reduction. And then of that amount, that is divided equally across the districts. And if you look at the one of the horizontal spreadsheets, you will see the list of all the districts on the left-hand side. And then as you work your way across that chart, you'll see two large boxes. And at the top of the box, you will see a reduction dollar amount, which is $224 million. That then is translated into a per pupil reduction dollar amount of $273 in 2010, and then $272 per pupil in 2011. And you can look at that chart to see what your districts, basically it's the same across all districts. The other horizontal sheet spreadsheet that I'll point out also has the districts listed on the left-hand side, and then this points out titled Comparison of Levies Under Current Law versus Senate File 1328. On this spreadsheet, you'll see that there is this relates to the consolidated levy, and you'll see that at the top, the equity levy, the operating capital levy, and the transition levy all are three levies that will be consolidated into one. We also have the alternative comp or the alternative compensation levy, and what we end up doing is basically moving that from the general education area of our statutes outside of that into, I believe, the excellence in education area. So as you move across that, you will see the total of those three levies that are consolidated, and then the impact on the that it makes, and in the end, the those levies, changes across districts of those levies are later bought down or bought off, and consequently there is no increase in the levies statewide. And members, if I could point you to the 8.5 by 11 horizontal spreadsheet. This one is entitled The Property Tax Tracking for Senate File 1328. On this tracking sheet, you will see the impact of the levies in this particular bill, and if you would look on the last page of that, on line 197, you'll see total certified K-12 levies after credits. That line you'll see under the current 2000 or different Senate current law, which is about the fourth column over. The proposal has a minus $6.4 million levy increase, and then in 2011 it has a $2.2 million proposal increase, and in 2012 a negative $1.6 million increase. Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, and members, I would like to offer the two amendments, technical amendments, that we could put on the bill, and then we could go through the language and touch on different provisions there. The first amendment would be the A53 amendment.
Secretary will report the stump A53 amendment.
Senator Stumpf moves to amend Senate File 1328 as follows. Page 18, delete Section 35, page 37. This is Amendment A53.
I don't. Senator.
Oh, wait, I do.
Senator Stumpf on the amendment.
These are the two. Mr. President and members, yesterday we had Senator Berglund had a proposal that related to mandate reductions. And we also carried a number of those mandate reductions in the education bill as well. And those reductions are being taken out of the education bill here and will be only in the mandate reduction bill so that they're not carried in two places. There are two other changes that I would point out at the bottom of this amendment. One is, or both of those relate to the alternative teacher pathways to licensure, and those changes, it changes the mandatory requirement of the Board of Teaching to a voluntary requirement, and then also changes the or deletes the mid-career portion of the of that language, and that's what this amendment does.
Adopt the amendment. On the motion to adopt the amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Stumpf, do you have another?
Mr. President, I do. It's the A49 amendment.
Secretary will report the Stumpf A49 amendment.
Senator Stumpf moves to amend Senate File 1328 as follows. Page 127, line 21. This is Amendment A49.
Senator Stump, discussion on the amendment.
Mr. President and members, one of the provisions, or a fairly major provision that was in the language, was a provision to bring our special education laws into conformity with the federal special education laws. And Senator Phoebe brought this proposal forward, and as it was working through the process, there was a stop in the Judiciary Committee, and one of the technical provisions that made this all work together was presented yesterday in the Tax Committee, or was talked about yesterday in the Tax Committee, but I felt it was better that it would be presented here before the whole body. This helps the address that provision in the language and brings it to the standard that the Judiciary Committee wants.
Further discussion on the Stump A49 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. There's what I'd like to do is to, we talked a little bit about the education funding and about the consolidated levy and about the some of the programs that are in the funding side of it. What I'd like to do now would be to go through some of the language. And members, you have a omnibus education summary in front of you, but what we could do would be to look at some of the major provisions in the bill, and there are several of them. And I'd like to start with asking Senator Saltzman to talk a little bit about the one such provision, the charter schools area, that a group of legislators have been working on for quite a while. Senator Saltzman.
Senator Saltzman.
And thank you, Mr. President. When President Obama recently called for greater innovation and excellence in our American schools, he noted that charter schools are one of the places where much of that innovation occurs. But he also added that expansion of charter schools must not result in the spread of mediocrity, but in the advancement of excellence. And that will require states adopting both a rigorous selection and review process to ensure that a charter school's autonomy is coupled with greater accountability. We should be proud that in our state that we've been the leader in the charter school movement and that this body passed the first legislation on charter schools in 1991. So for the past 18 years, while we have seen tremendous growth in charter schools, we really haven't taken a broad look at that initial legislation and really had a time to step back and really review that. And that is what we have done in the Senate for the past 4 months, is bringing together a broad stakeholder group to talk about many of the strengths of charter schools, but also addressing some of the problems that have resulted and really potentially tarnish the excellent charter schools that we do have in our state. So working with the Association of Charter Schools, with sponsors, with other education groups that are national leaders in the charter school movement, and also our districts and parents and teachers, this bill really is a real chance at looking at how we strengthen entire movement in the long term. Some of the components include a fundamental restating of the sponsor's role. We've also included language to ensure that sponsors are not are are non-sectarian. We've had a significant strengthening of charter school governance through establishing new expectations for board operations and members. There's been a basic and essential redefinition of conflict of interest policies for boards, employees, and sponsors. And there's been a restatement of expectations for greater innovation and a process for accountability. So in this bill, you know, what we really focused on is giving sponsors a greater role and a process also for how sponsors apply to be approved. We've also been much more specific in the contracts that are developed between charter schools and their sponsors. We've included a new provision regarding charter schools administrators and creating qualifications and ongoing expectations for them in terms of their professional development. And this particular provision already has been sent to other states as a model for how we really ensure that the leaders of charter schools, who are not required to be a licensed administrator, really meet the expectations that are needed for them to lead these new schools. Most of the provisions in this bill did come from the Department of Education, as well as leading charter school experts. And there is a provision, a couple provisions in this bill that I do want to note. We have at least begun to recognize building corporations that in the past and currently our statute states that state money may not be used to purchase lands or buildings. And the legislative auditor has noted that charter schools sometimes circumvent this law by creating affiliated building corporations. And in this bill, there is language that will now regulate how these affiliated corporations are now created and also require the Education Commissioner to approve future building purchases and construction in advance based on specific criteria. In these challenging economic times, it makes sense that we assure the taxpayer that our limited public dollars are being well spent. There is a provision in this bill also, there are two provisions, that charter schools were never intended to replace a school that is closed. And so we have noted language that when a school has been closed because of a district consolidation or because of changing demographics, that there is a process in place that a charter school sponsor can apply to the district or also to the education commissioner for a waiver to open a school during a 3-year period of time. So with that, I want to thank Senator Stump for giving me the opportunity to work with my colleagues on this very important provision. I think that we have a tremendous opportunity to support the charter movement, to allow it to grow and flourish. But we also need to address challenges, welcome oversight, embrace greater accountability, and enhance innovation. Thank you, Senator Stump, for your leadership on this bill.
All right.
Mr. President.
Very, very important legislation here today, and there's way too much noise. Let's slow it down. Thank you.
Mr. President. Madam
Stump.
President. Thank you. I'd like to ask Senator Wieger if he would touch on a very important component in this proposal relating to assessments.
Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Madam President, members. What does it mean to earn a high school diploma in Minnesota?
Just a moment, please. If you have to have a conversation, if you would take it to the retiring room or the hallways, give some respect to the people who are speaking and presenting this bill, please. Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Madam President. One of the key provisions we focused on is what does it mean to earn a diploma in Minnesota? Approximately 70,000 students hope to achieve that in June of this year. And each year, we now have electives, 7 electives that are required. We also have various requirements for language arts, 4 credits, math, 3 credits, 3 credits in science, and 3.5 in social science. In addition to the requirements of completing these courses, we have standards, expectations in place, and it's high stakes in the context that you have to pass a test for several years. It's been the basic skills test, which basically is at an eighth grade level, I would say, and the majority of Minnesotans have passed this. In 2007, the legislature made a major change. It went to the grad test, and we are increasing the requirements for graduating in Minnesota schools. And specifically, we're focused again on reading, math, and writing. The good news, members, is that most students are proficient in writing, in reading. And if you're interested in how your school district's doing, we have that data available. That's the good news. However, we do have a challenge, and we address this in the bill, math. Many students right now, in fact, thousands of 11th graders in Minnesota are getting ready to take that grad test on math. And the projections are that maybe half will be proficient. We need more time, more remediation to address this deficiency. We've met with the commissioner, the governor's office, to discuss this concern. And what we're proposing here is that for students that are not proficient in math at this time, that in order to graduate, they will have to go into remediation courses, and that would be required. As well, they would have to attempt a retest at least twice, and hopefully they'll make it. Other provisions that we have, and by the way, this would be for the next 5 years for students that would be affected. And what we need now in math is to improve the overall approach for teachers. We have academies where many teachers are being trained, retrained to address this concern. We also are looking at attracting additional people for being math teachers. But it's not only a serious issue in Minnesota, it is across the country, but we are suggesting a change there. And I might add, too, for the math, it is an issue for the need for remediation when these students go to college. And if it's in the state college university system, over 35, sometimes up to 40% of students require this remediation. So we're going to intensify efforts in that area, but we're going to have a window where you could still graduate. Members, we're not going to change the requirement, though, that you must be proficient in writing and you must be proficient in reading. And there are, the majority of students are proficient, but there still are those that are not, and we will encourage them to get on that track through remediation courses that they're in now. So that's the major provision as it relates to math. We also will ask that the commissioner align our high school standards and the tests with the benchmarks for going to college. And students that take the placement test in college, whether it's ACT or an Accuplacer, other instruments are used. We want the test that you take in high school to align with expectations so that students are college ready, work ready. And we have a number of people that are working to achieve that goal. We also have expectations here on providing feedback promptly to students and parents on the results of tests and the posting of information overall as to how schools are doing. That would summarize the provisions made, and if anyone would like information about their particular district, I do have that available.
Thank you, Senator Wieger. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam President. I'd like to ask if Senator Saxhog would talk just briefly on the one of the provisions that I think is important as we look forward in the next few years on how we deliver education across our state.
Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Madam President. I'd like to just refer to sections 51 through 54 in Senate File 1328. And they, as Senator Stumpf said, they talk about online learning. And this language was designed to promote more and better communication between an online provider, the enrolling school district, the students, and the parents. The goal is to have communication between the online provider and enrolling district when a student applies for an online class rather than after the student is enrolled in the class. There's the various sections, but I think the one that I point to is probably the first section, Section 50. It requires a syllabus that shows the online course meets the state standards, assessment requirements, course content, contact time, and student-teacher communication. The enrolling district has 15 days to confirm or deny that the course meets the requirements. If an online class meets and exceeds graduation requirements for the enrolling district, it cannot be denied. Down to Section 53, which reestablishes the Online Learning Advisory Council until 2013, and we think that was a very good thing. So we believe that that we've strengthened the rigor and certainly the communication between the provider, the district, the students, and the parents, and that this is a encouraging part of the bill.
Thank you, Senator Saxog. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Senator Saxog and Madam President. Along with that, there also is a provision that came from the governor's proposal relating to the virtual education center, which will enhance the opportunities that school districts have across the state in sharing materials and programs. We also have a very important component in here relating to early childhood. And the early childhood component is one area that the committee felt should not be reduced but expanded to a small degree. And we had a number of discussions how the investments in early childhood can reduce our long-term expenditures in areas such as special education and other fairly expensive components in our current education system. Currently, we spend, out of the dollars that we put out, we spend about somewhat over $1.5 billion of our budget goes into areas of special education and special needs. And so early childhood initiatives have become somewhat of a hallmark of the Senate as an approach to reducing those longer-term expenditures. And I'd like to ask if Senator Clark would touch on some of those initiatives.
Senator Clark.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, this is, as Senator Stumpf said, a key component of our bill. The Senate has worked very hard to try to figure out how we can reduce the achievement gap. A couple of things that are in here, actually all the initiatives really have been the work of the bipartisan bicameral early childhood caucus. We have in here the provisions that will help us move to a quality rating system for those providers who wish to be rated. They will, over time, be gaining incentives and higher rates that they can receive for quality. We want to make sure, as a cornerstone of that, that parents have choices, that parents have good information, so that they can figure out where they best want to have their kids, whether it's childcare, whether it is a preschool setting, whether it's in a school-based program, whether it's Head Start. So it really helps us look at in the future about how we can help make sure our kids are ready for kindergarten, which is one of our state's goals. As Senator Stumpf said, that also helps us reduce special ed costs, English language learning costs, and classroom disruptions. But again, the parent needs to be at the core of this. So that's a pretty critical piece that moving forward. It also establishes an Office of Early Learning, building off of a Pennsylvania model, which we believe we ought to be able to use existing staff. There would be a director who would be confirmed by the Senate, but would be responsible to the commissioners of education and Human Services, recognizing the strengths in both of those, trying to frankly break down some bureaucracy, some bureaucratic barriers that currently exist. We are able in this bill to expand allowances, to go to a couple more places in greater Minnesota and in the Twin Cities, in particularly some suburban areas, which ought to be good. We are able to strengthen components of school readiness. This is something that was in the governor's bill, making sure that we are having in our school-based programs the kinds of things that the research has shown really works. So those are some of the key things that are in there. We obviously do not have resources to bear, but with this bill we are able to move a bit forward on our goals that everybody has been working on.
Thank you, Senator Clark. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam President. I'd like to ask Senator Olson to address two fairly large provisions in the bill, one relating to homeschool changes and also the literacy or reading section.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Senator Stumpf. The homeschool, there's a homeschool mandate reduction bill that is incorporated in here that reduces some of the reporting requirements for homeschool families to the superintendent. This also provides a relief for the superintendents as well. And so there's a number of those in there, and the other provision that is, I think, was key to this bill was that the homeschoolers also agreed to give up their access to the non-public school aid, which meant they could get up to $77, I believe, for textbooks, but each family as a school would apply for that money, and while they did not own the books, the school district did, it was a horrendous task for the schools to keep these records, and it has actually saved the state almost $1.4 million. So they have made a contribution in exchange for some less reporting, but it's not given up their accountability for providing for the education of their children. It was agreed on by all concerned, and so it was I think it's a very positive move that we're making, recognizing the maturing of the homeschool movement. The second area that is one that we've seen before, because the Senate passed some literacy provisions last year, and they were in the policy bill that was ill-fated when it reached the governor's desk for other reasons. He was strongly in support of our literacy provisions. We have had on our statutes for over 8 years a requirement that we reach proficiency by third grade for our students in their ability to read. We have not been succeeding in that. We have required in it that students be taught using the scientifically research-based methods that came from the National Reading Panel. There's five elements: the phonemic awareness, phonics, fluency, vocabulary, and comprehension. But we have not succeeded in that. And working with parents and educators, the focus of this effort is on improving the preparation of teachers to teach all of the elements of reading. And that has been an interesting challenge as well as an opportunity. And this bill is back in very slightly modified form to continue that track of improving our teacher preparation so that they can be successful in our children learning to read with proficiency by third grade. So that is the essence of our literacy provisions that Senator Saltzman and I have been kindred spirits in advancing.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Senator Olson. There's also a couple of others that we'll get to in just a second, but I wanted to mention that I had overlooked a couple of important things in here in the language. One of them is traditional, and that relates to fund transfers. There are several fund transfers that members requested. Another one was the use of the health and safety levy for the repair of elevators that are either condemned or in ill repair, in need of repair. And the other one was, when we look at the reductions that are made, one piece that was that I did not mention that mitigates some of the cuts to the school districts was a result of the mandate reduction proposal that that has been brought up earlier. In the language that you have before you, there is several pieces that takes and loosens the restrictions on dollars that currently go out to our school districts. For example, the 2% staff development money that has been designated to be set aside specifically for staff development now in for the next two-year period will be allowed, school districts will be allowed to use that to help their school operations run. That's true with the learning and development revenues, and that's true with the safe schools levies. Obviously something that all are very important on their own right, but under these very difficult circumstances and budget period, we have chosen to relieve those restrictions. So the school district in total would have about $370 per pupil that they would not have to comply with those restrictions. And that is a little bit of help for those districts in trying to balance their budgets. Next, I would like to ask if Senator Bonhoeff would talk about a little bit about the technology components in the bill and again, a very important part.
Senator Bonhoeff.
Madam Chair, within the bill, there's a provision that addresses technology, and this was a provision that was in the bill last year as well. We have a task force called the Minnesota Education Technology Task Force, which I serve on, as well as there's a representative, and then it's made up of people from our school districts all over the state, the directors of technology, as well as our department technology experts. And we have established a process so that there are guidelines for school districts to make sure that we have equal access to technology, both for learning in the classroom and also for being able to do the formative and summative assessments. This process sets forth guidelines around instructional technology, around technological tools, around shared services that facilitate network and data systems administration, around data practices and data management, around infrastructure. Really what we're doing is we're saying that we want districts to have a technology plan, and we want it to be equal around the state. And so we are surveying where districts are currently, and then we're identifying gaps between where they are and where we'd like us all to be. And we're asking that school districts spend their resources in accordance with the guidelines and the plan. It is our hope that in doing this in a systematic way, that we can raise all the school districts up to the same level so that we can take advantage of what technology can provide in terms of our ability to analyze best practices in the classroom, as well as having tools such as the interactive whiteboards spread across the state, and that we can move towards that uniformity. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bonhoeff. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam President. I'd like to ask Senator Phoebe if she would talk a little bit about the special education changes that she authored and that are in this bill.
Senator Phoebe.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Stumpf. I'm thrilled to talk about this part of the bill. I believe this part of the education bill represents kind of a political miracle. It really showcases the hard work and dedication of all school districts, administration, teachers from both public and non-public schools were involved, and special education advocates. And having been involved in school districts for many years, I realize how difficult it is to get all of those people around the table and then to get all those people to agree about things with regard to special ed. It shows a huge commitment to all students' educational success. The majority of the changes in these provisions make clear expectations, resolves conflicts between state rule, statute, and federal law, and they just mostly make good common sense. Knowing what the law means and how timelines will work will save money for all of our schools. This legislation also enables educators to focus those dollars and attention on special education students. Some of the key points in the bill, in this part of the bill, are special education law is enacted through federal law, state statute, or legislatively required rulemaking. There will be no more Minnesota Department of Education making law through memos. The bill changes standards to rules, clarifying that these are legislatively driven. Clarifies the federal 8th District Court decision into state law that the party, parent, or the school district that brings the special education lawsuit is responsible for the burden of proof. The errors and omissions standards applies to special education complaints and hearings. So if a minor technical error is made by the school district, that small task is not enough to sue the district or the school. I really don't think that districts have a clear idea yet of the positive ramifications financially that these provisions will have on their districts. Our economic situation, as you all know, demands new approaches and real reform, and this bill has both. You can be proud to be a part of this. This is an opportunity for all of us as members to support our local districts, our special education families, and all of our families in our district. Thank you.
Thanks, Senator Phoebe. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam President. I think when we look at where we are, the other day I was looking at the schedule of when the deadlines are for finance bills, and obviously we're about, I think, 2 weeks ahead of when we probably need to be, but I think it's a compliment to a lot of different individuals, the committee members, the staff. But I want to thank in particular the Senate Counsel and Research, and then also the engrossing secretaries and all of those people that stay long after we leave to actually get the papers and everything in the system so that we can actually do what we're doing today. So a big thank you to all of those. Members, in summary, I think there's no way that you can sugarcoat this. It is reductions to our education system, but we have tried our very best at trying to mitigate those reductions and to try to give an element, a sense of where education should be going and how important it is to our economy in the state, as well as how much we value the position that we're in terms of a changing society, a changing world, and one that currently is in some very significant and severe budget problems. So Madam President and members, I would stand for any questions, and I thank the other committee members that have participated would also help in answering questions that you might have.
Thank you, Senator Stumpf. Is there any discussion on Senate File 1328?
Madam President.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Stumpf be willing to answer a couple of questions?
He will yield.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Stump, the first question I wanted to ask, we had some debate earlier this year when we were talking about, I think, adopting some of the rules that we were going to require that the budget bills are balanced in the out years as well. And can you tell me, is this bill balanced in the, I guess, what we call the tails outside of the current budget biennium?
Senator Stumpf.
Madam President and Senator Hahn, as yes, we try to look at the impacts as we move forward, and in particular the impacts of over a period of years. The best way to describe the proposal that you have before you is that we are currently in dealing with the this next biennium, which is 11 and 12, we have the budget proposals and the spreadsheets before you show you exactly how that works out. When you look at the, or I should say 10 and 11, when you look at 12 and 13, which is the out, what we call the out years, we see a bigger reduction, what would be a 7% reduction for our districts. And so if you look at, or the question is are we balanced? Yes, it is balanced, but it does mean a significant cut in those out years.
Senator Hahn.
Madam President, thank you. Well, and that's part of the question I wanted to also ask Senator Stumpf. You've got in the bill a significant amount of the federal dollars coming into the 10-11 budget that would offset some of the reductions that you mentioned in your summary. And I guess the point is what you're saying is that money, we're not anticipating that money to be there in the tails, and so the full effect of the cuts that are being made would be in effect in the out years unless there was some significant revenue source that were identified or something else. Is that essentially correct?
Senator Stumpf.
Madam President and Senator Hahn and members, correct. If nothing happens after this bill passes, there will be a 7% reduction in 2012 and 13.
And
Senator
Hahn. And Madam President, I'm also wondering if Senator Stumpf could talk a little bit about the federal dollars. And we had some discussion in our committee, and I'll confess it's a little unclear to me right now. That's what I'm hoping you can clarify. Is we had a presentation about the federal monies that were going to be used for education. Some of it is encumbered pretty severely, I think, some of the Title I monies and special education kinds of funding. But the funding that is in the bill here, the ARRA additional funds, I guess I'm unclear whether or not those monies are going to be available to replace the general fund dollars that are lost due to the cut. In other words, if I'm looking at your spreadsheet, the long one that is the statewide ADM aid and adjustment, and it's showing essentially in 2010 for every school district on a per pupil basis a reduction of $663 per pupil and then a add back of this ARRA money of $389 resulting in a net of $273. But what I want to understand is whether or not that $389 that's coming back is going to go right into the general fund and be available to pay teacher salaries, benefits, transportation costs, other operating costs in the budget, or are those funds going to be encumbered in some way because of the maintenance of effort restrictions the federal money has?
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam President and Senator Hahn and members. You're absolutely correct. The federal dollars that we receive, which is $519 million, And then that's evenly split, basically, through a mechanism that has been spelled out to us by the federal U.S. Department of Education, creates the reduction over a two-year period of that $273 and $272 per pupil. When the way the bill is right now, we have still maintained our effort so that those dollars are unrestricted to the local districts. And I believe we have a very small edge there where we continue to maintain our effort. And members, I did not explain this because I think members of the Education Committee would appreciate how quickly we'd get lost in the weeds. But basically, the federal dollars had many strings attached to it, and even up until very recently, we're adding different provisions which changed the complexion of how those federal dollars were being used and how they could be used. The main idea was to from the federal government was that these dollars should be spent as quickly as possible, primarily to increase jobs across the country. We found with working with the Department of Education, our Minnesota Department of Education, a way through the department to divide that money evenly, to reduce the cut evenly across the two-year period of 2010 and 11. And so the way it is right now, we are maintaining effort, and we give that flexibility to school districts to spend that money.
Senator Hand.
Madam President, thank you, Senator Stumpf, for clarifying that. But I do also want to ask, and I'm going to assume that that money is going to be able to be available to pay the ongoing costs of school districts, but I'm looking at the three districts that I represent, Eden Prairie, Minnetonka, and Hopkins School District, and even after that federal money is added back in, there is still a fairly significant reduction in per pupil funding. And if we assume that the bulk of the general fund is going to pay for staff costs, and I'm looking at Hopkins is going to be about $2 million lower in total, Eden Prairie about $2.7 million, Minnetonka $2.2 million. What recommendation should we offer to school districts when we say that that money is not going to be there? What is their alternative to reducing their staff in whatever the number is, 30, 40, 50 teachers, to accommodate the loss of revenue? What is the thing that we can offer to our local school districts to help them manage through the fact that the money is not going to be there?
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Hand. As I mentioned earlier, there's really no way to sugarcoat net cuts that our school districts are going to receive. The one provision, and I think maybe I mentioned it, but if I didn't, I'll also mention it now, is that as we reduce the reduction, so that we end up with, let's say, the $272 and $273 per pupil reduction, there is also federal money that flows not through this legislation but directly from the federal government to the Department of Education and then directly to school districts. That federal money is for Title I and special education, and even though we do not have runs for you on those dollars, there will be additional money that districts will receive in those two areas. And so that will also help mitigate some of this. But you are absolutely right. Everyone has a problem this year in terms of balancing the budget. The approach the Senate took was to try to divide these budget balancing proposals throughout the budget, and education participated in that, K-12 or E-12 education participated in that, and so it's not, it's a little bit different than before, where education was not part of it, but because of the budget deficit being so large, I think it would be almost impossible, maybe impossible, to have any kind of a balanced budget at the end of session if we did not participate in some way, shape, or manner. It doesn't make it easy. There will be cuts. There will be reductions. We've tried to look at mechanisms to mitigate that. We've tried to look at mandates to relieve some of it. But in the end, budgets are going to be cut. Staff will be cut. And there will be some real pain out there.
And Madam President.
Senator Hand.
Thank you. And thank you, Senator Stumpf. And I appreciate your comments. And I think the thing that is crucial for us as we look at this bill to remember is that we are, because of the financial condition of the state, and this bill is saying we need to cut the spending in a significant way, but we are not giving any tools to local school districts to significantly manage the single biggest cost that they have, which is the cost of their employees. And so what we're doing with this bill is we are saying we are going to cut the budget by 7%, and we're going to add back in for 2 years some federal money that will go away so that full 7% will be out there in the tails. But we're not going to give any mechanisms to local school districts to do anything other than to fire their staff, reduce their staff, and in some cases by a significant amount. And so I think, members, that to me is one of the crucial flaws of this bill. You've taken a different approach than the governor. The governor said we want to keep a priority, and I think in our caucus we've agreed to try to keep the priority on education. You've chosen to go another route and say, no, we're going to take cuts evenly across the board. But you haven't provided any mechanism for school districts to manage through this. You're handing off to them a significant reduction in funds and saying your only choice here to deal with this is to cut your staff. That's what you have. That's the option you have. And I don't know that that's an acceptable option. And I do have an amendment. I've got the A-103 amendment that I'd like to offer.
The Secretary will report the A-103 amendment. Was that correct, Senator Hand?
Senator Hand moves to amend Senate File 1328 as follows. Page 154 after line 26, insert Section 7. This is Amendment A-103.
Senator Hand on the amendment.
Thank you, Madam President. And members, what this is, and I will admit to you, this is not an ideal solution. There are many of us, I'm one of them, that are not huge fans of mandates. But what this does... is that this imposes a salary freeze on school districts. And so what this says is that after this bill is enacted, that it doesn't affect any contracts currently in place, but it does give the power to school districts to not have to raise their costs for staff any more than what they are currently. And so the effect of this would be is that the current level of staffing would be able to be maintained. The class sizes would be able to stay the same, that there would not be a huge disruption in the delivery of education programs to school districts. And I think that given the fact that we have no other alternatives in this bill, I think this is a fair alternative to say to schools and to parents across the state that we're going to, if we have to take a hit spending, or if we're not going to have the money to fund you, we ought to at least give you some mechanism to be able to preserve your program structure. And that's what this bill would do. And so I would ask for your vote in support of this. This would only be in effect until for the current biennium. After that, it would the freeze would go away, but it would allow the school districts to manage through this two-year period without having to take dramatic cuts in staffing. And so I'd like to ask for a roll call vote.
There will be a roll call. Discussion on the A103 amendment. Senator Stumpf?
Thank you, Madam President and members. You know, I think a lot of us thought about this, and the governor had some proposals relating to a number of approaches. And I think the mandatory arbitration was one of them, and I believe the last one the governor proposed was a kind of a voluntary time off, or maybe not so voluntary time off. But there are different approaches, and a salary freeze is again an option. But and the situation is dire. I mean, I don't, like I said a number of times, there's no way to sugarcoat what we're trying to do here. And I think by the end of session, many of us will wonder, you know, this idea of being a legislator isn't all what we had anticipated. But I think you have to give credit to the people that work for us and work for the school districts. And if you look at the faculty, state university faculty, who were the first to actually bring a proposal to the administration, they took a 0% increase for the next two-year period. The community college faculty are looking at the same proposal. And so I really have confidence that our public employees will and I will see and understand that as districts work toward a budget solution, and we appreciate the independence of our school districts, that they would be in a better position to work this out than we at the state level. Again, some other states have looked at this, and I think maybe some states have even adopted proposals like this. But I do have confidence in our public employees, and I would ask that we do not adopt this amendment, and that we move forward with that same confidence in our public employees.
Is there further discussion on the A103 amendment? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on the A103 amendment. The Secretary will close the roll. There being 18 yeas and 48 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Any further discussion? Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, I have the A-106 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A-106 amendment.
Senator Murphy moves to amend Senate File 1328 as follows. Page 8 after line 35, insert. This is Amendment A-106.
Senator Murphy on the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman and members, this is a pretty straightforward amendment. And what it does is it eliminates the QComp program and takes that money and rolls it into the basic formula. So for anybody that's not a big fan of QComp, this is a good amendment. Anybody that wants more money on the basic formula for your school district, this is a good amendment. Once again, it's pretty straightforward. It eliminates the QComp program and rolls that money back into the basic formula. What it does is it means, and we don't have an exact run on this, but I'm told from staff that it means about $70 on the formula.
Is there discussion on the A-106 amendment? Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam President and Senator Murphy and members. up until this year, I have not been the greatest fan of the QComp. And I'll tell you why, and I'll tell you why one of the changes that has happened. QComp was a program that's been in place for a number of years. It was an initiative from the governor, and it was an initiative to basically try to get change in the PELRA legislation relating to steps and lanes. What it has evolved into is primarily a staff development type program to enhance the quality of our teachers in the state of Minnesota. And it's a rather fairly intensive program, one that 43 school districts are now in. There are problems. And Senator Murphy touches on a program that's in a very early stage. When the governor proposed this, we sent some staff out to Colorado and some other conferences to examine the whole approach that the governor was suggesting. The reports and the information that we got back was that this type of program, QComp, would take anywhere from 5 to 7 years to implement. It takes time to institute changes into our system, and it takes money, and it takes resources. Well, as of last summer, we asked the legislative auditor to look more closely at the QComp program, and they came back and identified a number of areas that needed to be changed. Area number one, the governor wants this as a statewide program, but it isn't. 43 districts currently are involved in QComp. Almost all of them are in the metropolitan area. The reason is that the program is not geared up for smaller rural districts, and consequently the $260 per pupil that school districts receive in revenue is not available to all districts across the state. So what we did this year in the language is to take and require the Department of Education to take any excess forecasted amount, and there always has been. Last time there was $22 million dollars that is triggered back to the general fund from the QComp appropriation. There will be extra dollars this time as well. What we're saying is that Department of Education, we want this program to be a statewide program. Send that money out to those rural districts. Basically, all the districts that are outside the rural regional that are in the rural regional equity district. And so we have the support of our committee that this is a program that can be useful, even though it's not fairly distributed at the current time. I think it should be fairly distributed, and we're trying going down that path. So, Senator Murphy, you caught me about a year too late, but I would have supported that, a couple years ago. But with the approach that we're taking, I think we'll make take that money and make it available to all districts in the future. And Senator, consequently, I'm not going to support your amendment.
Senator Jungbar.
Thank you, Madam President. And I rise to oppose the Senator Murphy amendment. Members, one of my school districts, St. Francis, has implemented QComp. In fact, they're the number one in the state at QComp. And they have used it precisely like Senator Stumpf said, to train teachers to utilize it that way. They've implemented it very well. It's very helpful to the young teachers. In fact, we need more money in QComp to make sure we can keep moving that program forward. So, members, on the basis of how effective it works in my district, I will be opposing Senator Murphy's amendment.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you. You know, all of the districts did have the opportunity to get this money at a much higher level than the $70 per pupil that would be spread around according to Senator Murphy's amendment, and they chose not to take it for various reasons. And Senator Stumpf indicated that some of the smaller districts had some special problems with taking it, but all of them had the opportunity to take it and use it and to try and change the way they were doing business, and a number of them decided not to do it. And so I think that we should not take the funds away from those who took that extra step and said, yes, we are going to try and improve our teacher training, mentoring of teachers, helping them develop their professional skills, and looking for different outcomes. And I think that those districts that took that step forward and are moving in that direction should be allowed to keep that money.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, stand in opposition to the Murphy Amendment. This year, Secretary Duncan actually has given speeches talking about the importance of moving towards this kind of compensation, and he has actually highlighted what we in Minnesota are doing, which underscores that we often seem to be at the forefront of real innovation and reform. The other thing I would say is that those districts who have been working to get into this program and those who are already in this program have spent a long time and invested a great deal of work in developing, implementing, and refining this program. It would be quite unfair in the middle of us making significant cuts and having all of their, you know, funding up in the air in terms of they don't know what they're going to be getting, for us to take something that they were counting on and take it away. In addition, one of the things that districts have complained about is they have hesitated to get involved in QComp, even if they were interested, because they were afraid that in 2 years from now, the funding could be gone, and it would be like the next great idea would take its place. So I've appreciated what Senator Stumpf put in this bill that says not only will we support QComp, but we're going to do these alternative grants to find a way to get these districts who have had barriers to getting in the program. So now is the time when we ought to be saying, let's go forward with this rather than do something such as Senator Murphy is suggesting and withdrawing it.
Any further discussion on this amendment? Senator Murphy.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, I can see that there is a little bit of an opposition to portions of this amendment, and that's to be understandable. I mean, any time that, such as Senator Jungbauer or Senator Bonoff, any time that you have a program where your schools are getting more money, even though the program, as according to the legislative auditor, doesn't really work, I would say that the results haven't proven any better test scores for students. I mean, that's inconclusive. I would have to say that the program has marginal to non-existent benefits. And, you know, old man Ford once made this vehicle called an Edsel. After it was rolling around out on the road for a couple of years, and they figured out that, you know, the tie rod ends go out in it. It doesn't. It dog walks down the road. The engines blow out on it. You only get about 35,000 miles out of this old Edsel. He pulled the pin on it and said, okay, you know, we're just not even going to build that model anymore. Folks, we spend a lot of money in education. And there's not one person in this room that doesn't think that that money is well invested. I would have to say the majority of the money is well invested. I don't believe there's a person in the room that doesn't feel that to be true. But folks, when you have programs that have, as I said, marginal to non-existent benefits, get rid of them. I mean, that's what our mandate reduction was about. We got rid of a bunch of mandates that didn't work. Hopefully, and Senator Stump, I'll ask you about this here in a little bit, about one of those amendments. I think it's still in the bill. It's the one that asks for superintendents to file this report that we use the information kind of mythically, fuzzy, kind of feel good. But, you know, that's the idea. Get rid of some of the stuff that doesn't work and zero in on the things that do. Now, the part of the QCOMP program members that the legislative auditor said, you know, showed that it could have benefit was the staff training. Now, the last time I looked, Senator Stump, and maybe you can remind me, but it looks like we spend a lot of money on staff development. So if we take this QCOMP money, put it back on the formula, and let school districts develop a better staff development program, I think that we're doing good for the students, because that's the part of the QCOMP program that actually works, making sure that teachers have the skills necessary to reach all students. Now, I think everybody in here believes in that, but the overall crux of the QCOMP program has marginal, if not non-existent, benefits. So, folks, let's just get rid of it. Mr. Nauman tells me it's $75. Put that back on the formula. Let school districts, you know, let's give them the opportunity to spend that extra $75. They may want to do it in staff development. They may want to buy some new books for their classrooms. You know, in Greater Minnesota, we have way too many history classes being taught out of textbooks that were printed back in the 80s. I don't know, but I think that some things have changed between 1982 and today. We've got textbooks where students are trying to learn advanced algebra out of books that were printed back in 1975. Now, that, once again, some things have changed. There's been new technologies. You know, so in Greater Minnesota, we want to use that $75, which a lot of our districts in Greater Minnesota don't get. Now, Senator Roebling said that, you know, everybody had the chance to do this, which is true. That's very true. But in Greater Minnesota, when we've just absolutely cut any of our administrators right down to the bone, we don't have anybody to administer the program, so we can't apply for the money. So, folks, let's make it fair for everybody. Everybody gets a haircut, but with this, everybody's going to get a haircut plus $75.
Further discussion on the Murphy A106 amendment. Seeing none, we'll proceed to a vote. Roll call. We will have a roll call. The secretary will take the roll on the A106 amendment.
That's it.
The secretary will close the roll. There being 27 ayes and 39 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Senator Dahl.
Madam President?
Yes.
I have the A54 amendment.
The secretary will report the A54 amendment.
You can have those. Yes, Senator, Madam President.
Senator
Dahl moves to amend Senate File 1328 as follows. Page 59, delete Section 32, page 118. This is Amendment A54.
Senator Dahl.
Yes, thank you, Madam President and members. You know, I sit on the Education Committee, and we've done a lot of work, and I appreciate the work that the committee has done. I appreciate the leadership of Senator Stump, and I appreciate the passion that a lot of people that sit on that committee bring to the committee every day. We work hard. We put a lot of thought into the types of bills that are presented before us, and we do. We want what's best for education. What this bill or amendment does, it takes out one portion of this bill. And I'm going to support this bill, especially if we can remove this one portion. What the amendment does is takes out the alternative teacher preparation program for qualified non-traditional candidates. And with all due respect to Senator Bonhoeff, who brought this forth, we have discussed this in committee, and we've discussed it since. I think at a time when we're cutting education budgets, at a time when schools are going to have to do more with less, at a time when teachers feel even less valued than ever, I think to provide a shortcut to a teaching license is not the right thing to do at this time. The last I looked, there's no shortage of teachers. In Northfield, where I teach, we've had 200, 300 applicants for any one opening that may come up in the summertime. There is already an alternative licensure for teachers. And if you look at the bill, one of the repealers or one of the amendments is 122A.24 in the appendix. It shows a fairly rigorous process for finding an alternative licensure through the current system. In Northfield, we have someone who teaches Chinese. It's pretty hard to find teachers, especially who have a teaching license in Chinese. But this teacher has been with us for over 3 years as a community expert, going through the current method through the Board of Teaching and get an alternative license. This particular piece of the bill has support from the Chamber of Commerce, the Business Partnership, principals, and superintendents. However, it's missing a key block of support, and that is from the teachers themselves. So again, colleagues, at a time when we are being pretty tough on education and the overall budget, let's not be overly tough on the people who work every day with our students and our young people. Thank you.
Is there discussion on the A54 amendment? Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I certainly appreciate the debate and discussions that we've had, and there are a number of provisions in the bill, and I'm going to talk a little bit in general first that relate to how we, meaning the committee, the Education Committee, and I think it's reflective of the legislature in general, would like education to be like in the future. And it's driven by not just individuals. I think it's driven by the changing times that we're in. I think it's driven by the fact that there's kind of an international, global shrinking going on. And it's not driven by any, I think, any, like I said, any individual or any one group. In visiting with the governor yesterday and talking about the longer range vision for education, I think what we need to focus on is how Minnesota can maintain the high quality, maybe the highest quality, of education in the whole nation. And it's not something that's achieved very easily now because of the competition that other states have risen to. But Minnesota is well positioned in its education system. We might have be in the Midwest, and we might be far away from the populous coasts, and we might be even farther away from some of the international communities. But the one thing that Minnesota does have is high-quality education. We do have areas that we need to work on and improve, and I think it's in this vein that this legislation has come to us. The federal government is going to challenge us and is challenging us on how the future of education must look. Secretary of Education Duncan is laying out a plan to challenge how we think about education, how we deliver education, and I think he also is willing, and the Obama administration is willing, to put resources in those areas. Whether it's right or wrong, I think we need to at least be open to the idea that these challenges are there, and I think we can, like I say, this is one small aspect, and maybe the timing is wrong on this, but I think when you look at some of these provisions that relate to somewhat controversial areas, I think we have to at least not totally turn a blind eye off to that and or deaf ear, whatever. But I think we have to look at the opportunities that it might create rather than not having those opportunities.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in opposition of this amendment. Members, it's interesting when you look at, we do need to expand the alternative teacher licensure, but it is interesting the other way that exists today. Many of our professors in colleges would not be allowed to teach in our classrooms. I'm not even sure this bill gets us there in terms of alternative licensure, but it really seems like we're doing students no favors when a college prof doesn't qualify to come into a classroom in a high school or elementary school to teach.
Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I rise in opposition to this as well. And you know, I know that change is hard, and I have learned this session probably more than I've learned anything since I was elected 4 years ago, that when you really try and enact meaningful reform and change, there's a lot of resistance because people are used to the way it is, and we don't know what the change, what the consequences will be. So I can appreciate some of the concerns around this, particularly those teachers who are afraid that we're opening the door for others to come in and take their positions. But I would assert that, in fact, we're keeping our eye on what we're charged with. And what we're charged with is making sure every student in our state has an outstanding, equal, and excellent education. And in particular, this alternative path to teaching opens the door for two important programs in Minnesota: the St. Paul Teaching Fellows Program and Teach for America. And both of these programs brings the best and the brightest young people into our school districts where we are failing. I mean, we have to be honest. We have an achievement gap that we haven't yet discovered how to address and how to be successful with. Well, these are two programs that if we can allow them to be in these tough districts in our state, they have a track record of producing significant results. Right now, Teach for America recruits at the best private and public colleges, and they only recruit in literally the top 5% of the class, and even of that group, only 1 in 8 are allowed to be in this program. These kids, once they're selected and after having gone through a very rigorous and intensive selection process, they go through a very intense training. And then they go into these classrooms and they work one-on-one with these kids. You know, I have to share, when I was in college, I was planning to get my teacher certificate. I did, in fact, get that, and I taught in a similar type of district in Worcester, Massachusetts, where it was so tough in that school district that the kids would hold my hand at recess because they were afraid that I would get hurt on the playground. They would say, you know, Miss Bonoff, I think those guys will throw rocks at you. We better protect you. So I know what it is to go into those districts and to have that experience of making a difference and turning on the light for those young people, because that was my experience. I'll never forget it. And that's what's happening with this Teach for America program and the St. Paul Teachers Fellows. Let me talk about who is for this program. You have letters in front of you from the mayor of St. Paul, the mayor of Minneapolis, the superintendent of Minneapolis, the superintendent of St. Paul. These people want this alternative. Members have spoken about that we already have an alternative path to licensure. Well, actually, we have a pretty bad alternative path, and it hasn't been used at all for the last several years. Some people say, well, these kids are already in our schools. Right now, there's a very onerous waiver process that is limiting the ability to bring this alternative program to our state. We have actually already made compromises in this bill. I listened loud and clear to some of those teachers who were concerned about it. I got the emails, and so we put forward an amendment this morning that said if you were somebody who had had 10 years in the field, this no longer applies to you. You know, I was disappointed to take that out, but I wanted to really narrow and limit this so that we were strictly focused on our kids who are underserved and at risk and giving them every tool in the toolbox to impact their education. So if your eye is on improving education with our kids, please make the tough choice today and do not take this out. Thank you.
Members, we're starting to get a little noisy in the room again. So if, and we have 10 more amendments at the desk. So let's be brisk in our discussion. We're having a good, thorough discussion, but let's keep moving along. Senator Saltzman, then you're
there. There. On this point, that this is a very controversial amendment, and I appreciate the spirited debate on it. But if any of you have ever met a young person who has served with a Teach for America program, you can see the impact that they have on students. And right now, students and young people from our state who have attended our own our high-performing colleges and universities are being recruited for Teach for America. And in order to serve young people who are struggling, they have to leave our state. And it would be a wonderful opportunity for us to also listen to President Obama, who has really expanded the AmeriCorps program and called young people to really do community service, to look at this program. Now, right now in our country, there are 6,200 young people who are serving with the program, such as Teach for America, and they are making a tremendous difference. They are high quality, and many of them go on to receive higher education in education and go on to serve in our public schools and charter schools. I really hope that members will look at this as we talk about reform and we talk about things doing differently, that you will see this as a way to push for higher achievement of our teachers, that our teachers union should look at this as a way to recruit people into the field who have great potential, who bring with them talents, a real dedication. In order to apply for Teach for America, it's not just your grade point. There's a long process that they go through to determine that they are committed to overcoming adversity. And one of the things that we have to do with our achievement gap in Minnesota is that we have to ensure that our young teachers come to our program with the support they need. And Teach for America not only has a summer program, but they continue to work with teachers during these first 2 years, giving them support in the evening and on the weekends with their classroom management, with their lesson plans. And all of this is funded with private money. So I think we have a potential here to do great things for students. And I hope in voting today that you will all think about the students who are truly impacted by young people in this program.
It's a landslide.
Senator Lori.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I rise in favor of this amendment, and I guess I'd like to go back to a couple of the comments that have been made in this discussion, and I will try to be brief because I know there's a good deal of work yet to do, but I think this is a really important provision for members to pay attention to. I think that one of the things that Senator Stumpf mentioned was that this may be the wrong time for this, and I think that he's probably right in that assessment. We heard a lot about passionate teachers that are potential teachers that are unable to get through the current system, and I want to talk about the passion of many of the teachers that have gone through our current curriculum and are unable to find jobs right now. I want to talk about some of the teachers in my districts that have lost their jobs and make sure that members understand the passion and the talent and the commitment of our existing workforce before we try to solve a problem that I don't believe exists today. We do need to be working long-term and looking and making sure that we will in the future have the workforce to supply the quality teachers we've come to rely on in Minnesota. But right now, at a time while we're cutting budgets and teachers are losing jobs, adding to that job pool is probably just not the right time. We have the committed, qualified, passionate teacher pool to draw from right now and get us through these difficult times, and we will continue to look toward the long term and make sure that we have that teacher base as we move forward, but this is probably the wrong solution at the wrong time in this omnibus education bill. So thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Madam President.
Any further discussions? Senator Hahn.
Madam President, I'd just like to ask for a roll call vote.
Okay, there will be a roll call. Senator Dahl.
Madam President, and one final word. Teach for America is a great program, but Teach for America does exist. Teach for America will continue to exist. So what I'm afraid of is those people will be in those school districts and then will supplant jobs that are being sought by teachers that have gone through the process, the 4 years, have made it a career choice for them to go into the teaching profession. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on the A-54 amendment.
I think that's it, right? The secretary will close the roll. There being 30 ayes and 36 nays, the amendment is not adopted. So further discussion. Madam President,
I have the A-100 amendment.
The secretary will report the A-100 amendment.
Senator Dill moves to amend Senate File 1328 as follows. Page 3 after line 12, insert Section 4. This is Amendment A-100.
Senator Dill.
Madam President, members, this amendment corrects a problem that is facing a school district in my Senate district. It's a statewide provision. It deals with a consolidation issue where one school district has got a excess levy referendum, or an operating levy referendum with an inflationary increase, and another district which is consolidating with the other district does not. 3 years ago, we allowed school districts to pass referendums with a levy that was adjusted upward by inflation each year. This amendment before you allows the consolidating districts to continue with the inflationary increase as they originally passed it, and it does not pass that inflationary increase on to the other district that didn't pass it. It just allows them to continue as they have in the past, as their voters had decided to do in the first place. And without this amendment, the inflationary increase would disappear for the consolidating districts. So I think Senator Stump has seen this amendment. I'm hoping you'll accept it as a friendly amendment.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Yes, what we're dealing with here are districts, very, very limited districts, because these are districts that are consolidating. And quite often, they undergo a large impediment to try to bring that about. And so this is a help to those districts that enter into consolidation to try to address those problems that they encounter and try to address the new consolidated effort. So I do support that.
Further discussion on the A-100 amendment? Seeing none, we'll proceed to a vote. All in favor of adopting the A-100 amendment, please say aye. All opposed, say no. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion on the bill.
Madam President.
Senator Hahn.
Madam President, I have the A-102 amendment.
I didn't hear the number.
I'm sorry, it's the A-102 amendment.
The secretary will report the A-102 amendment.
Senator Hahn moves to amend Senate File 1328 as follows. Page 153 after line 21, insert Section 5. This is Amendment A-102.
Senator Hahn on the amendment.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, and I want to return to the discussion that we were having a little bit earlier and talking about the effect of this bill, and that we are going to be doing some dramatic reductions to funding on a per pupil basis to every district in the state that will have a dramatic effect on the ability of school districts to deal with their budget. And we have not provided any relief in this bill to allow school districts to manage this. And the first attempt that I offered to give them some relief, we turned that down. And I acknowledge that wasn't my ideal, my preferred form of trying to give school districts some flexibility. But this is another attempt. This, members, is simply a provision that would require that on July 1st of an odd-numbered year, if school districts have not reached an agreement with their bargaining unit, then they must submit to final offer, total package, interest, binding arbitration. And members, this is an important provision to put in this bill. If we are going to expect that school districts are going to be able to manage through a period of time when the funds will not be there, we have to give them some tools to manage with their bargaining unit to reach an agreement that they can live with. And this would allow that to occur. And so, members, I would encourage you to support this, and I'd ask for a roll call vote.
Is there a discussion on this amendment? Oh, there will be a roll call. Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam President and Senator Hand and members. This is a little different approach than the one that the amendment that you offered earlier. This is a binding arbitration, but it does relate to, I think, the same issue of do we want to, as a state, enter into the negotiations that go on between our district teachers and boards. And obviously, the last one we did not go on. And I think the what you mentioned earlier about there's no relief in terms of helping the with this budget, and that's not entirely true. As I mentioned, there are a number of provisions that we try to mitigate. The learning and development, the restrictions on safe schools levy, the staff development, the 2%, the loosening up of many restrictions to try to help the districts deal with this. If we address your amendment or pass your amendment, then we will be entering a whole new phase of how we deal with our public employees in terms of the bargaining that goes on. And I know all of us have different ideas about whether that bargaining is done, should be done between the two parties, basically the boards, school boards, and the or the district and the teachers and the staff. But I have confidence that as both the boards and the employees look at the situation they're in, they will agree with the outcome that they're whatever it is, whether it means a reduction or whether it means a 0% or whatever that outcome might be, it's hard for us to determine at this distance what those districts' reserves might be, what their ability to weather that financial storm. And I think that not having that kind of confidence and faith in those districts with this legislation is the wrong approach. And I really feel that and I could be wrong, but I really feel that we should have that confidence in those local districts and employees.
Further discussion on the amendment.
Madam President.
Senator Hand.
Madam President and Senator Stump and members, just to remind everyone that my amendment does not remove the ability of local school districts to bargain with their bargaining units. All it does is put a provision in that if they have not reached an agreement by a certain time, then that process has to go to arbitration. That's all it does. It doesn't remove the ability to bargain. It doesn't change that. Just saying that we are not going to have a situation go on where you go into a school year without having financial terms of the operation be settled. And this is a provision that makes sure that it can get settled in a timely manner. So, members, I again encourage your vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on the A-102 amendment.
The secretary will close the roll. There being 16 ayes and 49 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. I have the A101 amendment.
The secretary will report the A101 amendment.
Senator Rosen moves to amend Senate File 1328 as follows. Page 24, after line 33, insert. This is Amendment A101.
Senator Rosen on the amendment.
Thank you, Madam President. And if you recall, yesterday I had an amendment to deal with a temporary suspension on several of the funds dealing with reserved revenue for staff development, which is in this bill in Section 98. Also, the learning and development revenue, which is in Section 45, and the safe schools levy, which is in Section 47. What we did not deal with, and I thank you, Senator Stump, for including those in the bill. What we did not deal with, though, is the temporary suspension on contract settlement and deadline penalty. As it is right now, school districts are required to have their collective bargaining agreement signed by January 15th of each year. And we never know quite what school districts are going to be past that date, so it's already budgeted that there will be some school districts that are going to have to pay this penalty, and I believe it's $25 per pupil. I'm just asking for a temporary suspension on that to give more flexibility and more relief for these school districts so they can move forward. And Madam Chair, I ask for a roll call.
There will be a roll call. Discussion on the amendment. Senator Stumpf.
Madam President and Senator Rosen and members, this was brought up yesterday, and I did mention to you, and I gave, I believe, the wrong dollar figure, but I thought it was $250,000. It actually is $400,000 and $100,000 cost. But I think discussion of the issue is, with the January 15th deadline in place, it has actually had a beneficial effect in trying to bring contract settlements to a close sooner. If you look at the history of that January 15th, when we did not have that January 15th, contracts, many more contracts were not settled. And so I guess I would disagree that this will have a beneficial effect in trying to settle contracts. I realize that there is a penalty in that the $25 per pupil, but I do believe that the contract, with this language, does help settle contracts or bring districts to an agreement versus not having this language. And so I would ask to keep this language in the bill, because I think it's going to be even more important to try to have districts try to settle those contracts this year and be serious about the negotiations because of what Senator Hand has presented. You know, there's a whole host of reasons why the discussions between our employees and the districts are going to be much more more intense, I would imagine, this year than ever before. So I think it would be helpful to keep that language and not get rid of it.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I rise to support Senator Rosen's amendment. I believe that by having that January 15th deadline, we are putting most of the pressure on the school boards to settle, and not necessarily the people that the bargaining unit they're negotiating with. I believe that, you know, we are going to be in a very tough situation, and we have not given them any other tools to help them. They don't have money. They don't have a freeze that we're providing help with. So there will be bargaining units who will no doubt come back and will not want to settle for little or nothing, or even a cut. And so they'll hold out and hold out, and all of a sudden their school district will have even less money because their boards will know that they cannot give them the amount they're asking for. And I think that only hurts the students in those districts. That's who it really hurts, because then what happens is they have less money, they eventually do settle, but what do? We lose teachers. That's what happens. When there's not enough money to go around, we'll lose teachers. And then the class sizes will grow bigger, and other things will be cut from the programs, and it'll only hurt the students. And so I think Senator Rosen's amendment will help alleviate the pressures on those students who are going to lose opportunities if their districts end up losing that $25 because of a protracted settlement disagreement.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This works. The deadline works. When the deadline's in place, there's only a handful of schools that aren't settled. When the deadline's not in place, there's several dozen or closer to 100 districts that are not settled. So when you talk about protracted contract settlements, that's not good for morale, that's not good for teachers, that's not good for students. There's been 3 strikes in 10 years. Red Wing, International Falls, and Crosby, Ironton, all 3 of those strikes took place when there was no January 15th deadline. This is a bad amendment, members.
Further discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on the A101 amendment. All members having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 19 ayes and 47 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion? Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, would Senator Stump be yelled, please?
There he is. Senator Stump, you will yield? Yes.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Stump, I was listening to your comments about the federal funds, and that is where my question is going, towards the federal funds, specifically for special education. And I'm very concerned about this because, obviously, for this year, the federal funds are helping to mitigate the budget cuts here from 7% to 3.3%. However, when I'm talking to my superintendents, they're telling me we really don't want to take those federal funds dealing with special education because of the maintenance of effort with that. And if they agree to take those dollars, they're going to have to eventually, after the 2 years are spent, they're going to have to levy or use the funds out of the general fund to meet these expenses. And so they're very concerned about this expenditure. And I would just like to know your comments and why we agreed to take those funds on special education.
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam President, and members, and Senator Rosen. It's my understanding, and that's why we did not hand out runs as to the exact dollars that are not actually in this bill that relate to Title I and special ed. But there's a significant amount of money that's going out to the districts in that you don't see here or in the runs. And it's my understanding that the districts can use half of that money that they're receiving toward their maintenance of effort, and that there's one other provision. Maybe staff can help me out here. Madam President, Senator Rosen, I think there are various, obviously when you're dealing with that, you know, special ed and Title I, you have the maintenance of effort, but there are different provisions relating to local districts and their maintenance of effort than with the state and our maintenance of effort. The federal dollars do not count as increasing their local maintenance of effort. That's my understanding. Plus, they can use half of that federal dollars as toward their local share of maintenance of effort as well. But it is an area that we don't have all the details on yet, and the information that we do have is coming from the Congressional Budget Office. And so we did not want to give the impression that we have runs or that we know exactly what the end result will be when we don't actually know. Because with the state restrictions on the federal stimulus money, they were changing right up until we actually, after we actually adopted the bill in committee. And so that's, I think those details will work their way out shortly, and I hope very quickly, so districts can have some sense of where they're at financially.
Further discussion? Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Stump, that's my very issue there is that we are looking at these federal dollars to fill the gap and make everything better and mitigate some of these cuts, and we don't even know what we have. We have school districts that don't want to get involved in this because they can see the huge expense after our 2 years of funding here, and they are very concerned. So actually these budget cuts could be even more.
Further discussion on the bill? Seeing Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you, Madam President. I have the A50 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A50 amendment.
Senator Vanderveer moves to amend Senate File 1328 as follows. Page 16, delete Section 33 and insert. This is Amendment A50.
Senator Vanderveer, on your amendment.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, what this amendment does is attempts to reduce the amount of money going to the schools more proportionate to how it went on. So when the in the current formula, the money going to the schools when we increase funding was at a much reduced rate for many of our school districts. Most of mine received money below the statewide average increase in spending. So what this amendment does is simply attempts to, while keeping the federal stimulus money, to pattern the reductions more closely to the way the money was added in previous years. So if you live by the formula, you know, you should get, when we do reductions, they should follow the pattern of the formula as much as possible. So this attempts to do that. It's very close. We were not able to pattern it fully as to the percentage differences, but in order to keep the federal money, this is the best we could do. But it is more fair, it is more equitable, because the reductions are more similar to what occurred when the money was added. And I would ask for a roll call, Madam Chair. And you should have runs that show the impact. I think 90% of the senators in this room, their districts benefit from this. That's a simple fact of the matter. It's more fair. It's more equitable.
There will be a roll call. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, what this amendment does, let me just step back just a second. What we're talking about is about how we distribute the reductions across the schools, and the approach that the bill or legislation that you have before you in Senate File 1328 took was to reduce the reductions evenly across all students, and make that basically a subtraction, very similar to the way we added. If you remember last year, we added money from the state school trust fund when we made that change or eliminated the subtraction from that school trust fund last year. And that's the approach that we took in Senate File 1328. And then we were able to make that adjustment across the 2 years of 10 and 11 and make that adjustment even. So when you look at the runs, which is the one handout that the one horizontal handout that is entitled Allocation of Statewide ADM Aid Adjustment, you will see that in 2010 the adjustment is 273, and 2011 it's 272 after you factor in the federal stimulus aid. What this amendment does is the operative language is basically on 1.10, where you back out the operating referendum aid first, and then you make the subtraction across the students. And so when you look at the runs that Senator Vanderbeer has handed out, you will notice that they vary from district to district rather than are evenly distributed across the state. The impact would be that for those districts that have a significant amount of referendum aid, there would be less of a cut, and for those districts that have not as much referendum, there would be more of a cut. And so that's what you would see on those spreadsheets. There is no perfect solution when it comes to making reductions. We chose to try to make those evenly distributed across districts' total revenue, and this approach I think makes it much more uneven and much harsher on some districts than others. And I would ask, I certainly prefer the approach that we took versus this approach, and would ask for your support in not supporting the Vanderveer Amendment.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Right now we have quite an inequitable system. And this taking evenly from everybody just adds to the inequitability of it all. For example, a school in my district gets $5,400 in total state aid. Another district gets $8,400 in total state aid. This isn't just the formula money. The formula money, the base is the same for everybody. But some districts are making or taking substantially more state aid than others because of compensatory, because of sparsity, just a whole host of different things that we have available for districts. And so when we take $273 from a district that's only getting $5,400 now compared to a district that's getting $8,400, the percent of cut is significantly deeper than the one that's getting more money. And it's just a fairness issue here, members. It makes a big difference. And, you know, I know we've been working to close the achievement gap, but the way to do it is not to take programs away from those school districts that are typically doing well, which are often the ones receiving less money, and, you know, and lowering the level of learning for those students who are doing well. It doesn't make sense. We could close the achievement gap that way by bringing down the top tier, but that isn't the way we want to do it. We want to leave those students as whole as we possibly can. And I think by giving them a deeper cut than the others is simply unfair. And then there's one other thing that we have to consider here. The federal government is also providing additional money for Title I. Title I money typically goes to districts in our state that have high levels of compensatory money that the state puts in. So those districts that are receiving then the smallest cuts will also get a bigger backfill from federal stimulus money that isn't coming through this bill, but going directly to those districts that get Title I funding now. And so they may not hardly have any cut in some instances, while the other districts are taking a much bigger hit. And I think Senator Vandeveer's amendment makes a lot of sense. It is a fairer way to do it. Overall, when you think about how the system is set up now, his is a fairer way to do it.
Senator Bonoff.
Madam Chair, I rise in opposition to this amendment. And I think what you're hearing around the chamber is the combined frustration of the fact that our formula is not fair. And so we've been saying this for a long time. We actually last year spent months and months trying to find a way to allocate the formula and apportion the money in a more fair way. We know PS Minnesota has been working on this for several years, and there's been really a consensus among that group of a way to go forward. You know, we would have, had this not been a different year, we would have brought those initiatives forward, and we would have had hearings on them, and we would have allowed all of us to advocate for the approach we thought was best. You know, as a suburban district that doesn't get much aid, I've been a strong proponent of the location equity index. I think that that is absolutely something we ought to have. Just like those rural districts feel like their sparsity and declining enrollment is not adequately figured into the formula. There's a concentration factor with regard to how we do compensatory that says, you know, it ends up that even though there are many poor people all over the state, some feel that the urban areas get more than their fair share in that. And there's enough discussion that it is clear it's time to address people's concerns and it's time to tackle this and do the fair thing. Unfortunately, when you are cutting budgets, you cannot tackle formula reform. The only way to truly tackle formula reform with integrity is to have enough money to make sure there aren't winners and losers as you do it. So these amendments, this one, and I suspect you'll see others, are an attempt to make things fair. But in fact, they're not making things fair. In fact, we are picking the districts that have some of the toughest challenges, those property poor districts, and we're saying they should have the disproportionate share of the cut. Yeah, Minneapolis and St. Paul are going to get this money from the federal government in Title I funds and in special ed dollars. I think we ought to be looking at those monies, finding out how they're going to use them, having some sort of accountability with regard to it. I don't know yet whether we can. I don't know whether the federal guidelines will allow us to have oversight. I do know that if we would take this path, that, you know, what we're saying is for those districts that mostly are funded by referendum dollars, they would have less cuts. Well, is that fair? I don't think that's fair. I think we have to say that we're in this together, that we are going to take an equal slice at the formula this year, and then I know Senator Stumpf is willing to talk about all the different kinds of funding reforms, and we will do that, but we will do it in a thoughtful way and not pit rural against urban against suburban. That we said as a committee, we thought this was the most fair way to go forward. It would be a per pupil cut based on total revenue received, and we wouldn't slice it and dice it and make winners and losers.
Senator Vandiver.
Well, Senator Bonhoeff, that is absurd. You're saying we know the formula is unfair. We have an amendment in front of us that makes it clearly more fair. It makes the cuts proportional to the same proportion as the increases. Not even close, actually, but because the federal requirements won't let us really show the true spread between what the districts get when the new money comes on. But for you to say that we know the system's fair, unfair, but now today, when we're making it even less fair, let's oppose an amendment that smooths it out and makes it a little more equitable. That makes no sense to me, and it's not pitting any district against any other district. What we're saying is the way the money went on, the new money came on, is the way the cuts should come off. There is nothing wrong with that. It's very fair. It is very reasonable. And Senator Stumpf, you're a good man. I honestly don't believe that you even believe what you said. So this is so mild and so even and moderate and balanced as a way to deal with this that how could you not vote for it? Look at the runs and look at what it does to your schools. It barely reduces the districts that you're talking about, Senator Bonhoeff, mildly reduces them more, but the mega thousands more that they got out of last year's bill and the year before and the year before that are not touched. This isn't hurting them. It's not pitting anyone against anyone. It's just mildly modeling the way the money went on in the first place. This is a very fair approach. It works statewide. And I just ask you to look at the runs that you have on your desk and make your decision accordingly.
Further discussion? Seeing none, the secretary?
Madam Chair.
Oh, sorry, Madam Senator President. Day. Didn't see you over there.
Madam President, I don't serve on the Education Committee. We're having the same argument and the same discussion, and we don't have enough time. This is, you know, this is about the sixth year in a row I've heard this discussion. I will tell you, I'm getting totally aggravated when I walk through the schools in Owatonna, Minnesota, and I look at every classroom and say, you receive $80,000 to $100,000 less than a Minneapolis or St. Paul school. $80,000 to $100,000 per classroom. How can anybody say we don't have time to try and fix that? I have I've worked on it. I try to talk to people about it, and he finally comes with the bill. I haven't looked what it does to Owatonna or Faribault or any of my school districts. I don't know what it is, but I will tell you what we have now is not fair. There's total inequity in this thing. So you know, when I listen to people say, well, maybe next year we'll have a chance. Maybe next year we'll do it. It doesn't make any sense. And I understand, Senator Stump, and with your bill. I mean, I didn't vote against 2 years ago when we had education. I knew that then our schools were going to go downhill when it was 2% and 1%. That's why I didn't vote for the bill. They didn't have enough money last time around. This time around, they're going down again. It's like somebody in a boat, and what are we doing? Throwing them an anchor. Don't throw them a lifeline. We're throwing them an anchor. So I just, this is one of the inequities that is every year we're here. And now we're going to have the federal government, they're going to backfill the people that are already getting the heavy end of the dollars. So I just hope that somewhere along the line, Senator Stump, I don't know who convinced you that education wasn't a priority. You know, in all of our homes, up here in the state of Minnesota, haven't we all thought that education was a priority, police and fire, health care? It's like our families. What's important to us? We got to have shelter. We got to have food. We got to have a health care system, and we probably have to have some transportation. We don't have to go on vacation. We don't need the color television set. There's a whole host of things that families have to give up. They can even give up reading in their local paper or buying a new computer, a whole bunch of things. Why doesn't Minnesota have the same priorities when we say, okay, we're going to cut everybody the same? Does that make any sense? It can't make any sense to people that are in here. There's got to be priorities. So I don't know who gave you the idea that you should be the lead horse, because you're a wonderful guy and you're a great senator and you're a great guy on education, and I don't know why they wanted to kill the lead horse, but because we're going to need you as we go down through the line here. But I just this always riles me up every year when we talk about this equity in the school funding. So have at it. Ray, the Senator Vandeveer, you brought us something that's good. It probably might not go very good this year. We'll be back 2 years from now. We'll do it all over again. Maybe somewhere we'll have to get a little, advisory group around here. It seems like we've worked on about 18,000 bills that say, why don't you 18 people get together and study it during the summer? Please put me on the bill, Senator Stump. I want to be one of those advisory guys. I'll meet with you, and maybe by next time around we'll have this solved. Thank you.
Senator Vandeveer?
Thank you, Madam President. The only argument against this amendment that I've heard is, we know the distribution of the money isn't fair, let's make it worse. And frankly, I don't think that makes any sense at all.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Anderson.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
President.
Madam President. I need to respond to this amendment because I think there's sort of this undercurrent that we keep hearing that somehow students in the St. Paul and Minneapolis and some other districts are sitting around in their classrooms with pots of gold hanging out of their desks. And all the money that should be going to your district, Senator Vandeveer and Senator Day, is going to mine. And so I'm kind of a blunt person, so I'm just going to come right out and address this issue head on. Because I want to tell you a little bit, just for an example, about St. Paul, where I live and where my two children go to the public schools. And I want to say first off that this is an emotional issue for me like it is for all of you. All right. I want to say first off, my kids are getting a great education, and I'm really proud of their school. But let me tell you a little bit about St. Paul. 70% of our students qualify for free and reduced lunch. 17% of our students are special ed. 41% ELL. What does that mean? That means that those categorical funds, we get some money to pay for some of those extra expenses. St. Paul right now, before we pass this bill, we've got a $25 million deficit we're trying to figure out how to deal with in our district. So these cuts will come on top of that. I should mention the federal funds that are coming in. They can't be used, by federal law, they cannot be used to backfill general dollars. They can't be used to backfill formula. They can't be used for general educational purposes. They're required by law not to supplant existing funding. So don't think that all of our problems will be solved by stimulus dollars. They are not going to fill many of those holes. And let me tell you what this really means. St. Paul, and this is just an example, this is not about St. Paul, but I think it's an example of what we're talking about here. Because we have so many children in our district that need special education services, that need English language services, we pay our cross subsidy for special education in St. Paul. Besides the extra money we get to pay for those special ed kids, we spend over $1,000 per pupil in our cross subsidy. So taking it away from all the other students for special ed. Now compare that with the average metropolitan district spends $555 in their cross subsidy for special ed. And the average non-metro school district spends less $495 for their cross subsidy. So we're spending twice as much out of our general ed dollars for special ed in St. Paul on top of these categorical funds to meet the needs of those 17% special ed kids. We have children, a high number of children, with extremely severe disabilities. I don't need to read off the list. You know what I'm talking about. They're great programs for those children. We have over 1,000 students who haven't passed the basic skills test in either math or reading. 75% of them are ELL or special ed. Okay, so what's this about? I'm not complaining. I'm not trying to say, poor us. What I'm saying is that, yes, we receive dollars for special ed and ELL and poor kids because we have so many of them, and we use those dollars, and we spend more on top of those dollars than anybody else does. And guess what? We love all those children. I don't want to pit disabled children against poor children, against children who don't speak English as a first language, against my children, or against your children. But Senator Day and Senator Vandeveer, if you look at the numbers, you will see that my children, who are not ELL, special ed, poor, they're just average white kids from a well-educated home, they get the same education that your kids do. They don't get all that extra money any more than your kids do. It's not for my kids. It's not for your kids. It's for all those other kids that need money so we can offer them an education too. And they just happen to live in my school district. And as I said, God loves all those children. And so do I. So I'm not trying to be pitting ourselves against them. And members, we should vote this amendment down.
Mr. President, you know, that's what's been sold to us for 10 or 15 years. Senator Day, you don't have any homeless. Yes, I do. Senator Day, you don't have single parents. Yes, I do. Senator Day, you don't have different languages. Hispanic, Somali, Faribault, Owatonna, by the hundreds. We have the same problems, it's just smaller school districts. And so when somebody tells me that I get $100,000 per classroom less than St. Paul, that aggravates me. I'm like Senator Anderson. I sent four kids through our public school system. They got a good education. I don't have grandkids that are in my ear. Maybe I could tear up a little bit. But I'm not that type person, as you all well know. So I can get emotional on the other side of it. I'm just trying to get some fairness. I don't know if Senator Vanderveer is saying. I haven't even read the thing. He just says it brings up some fairness and stuff. But the problem I have, it's year after year after year, and we never, ever touch it. And I don't understand it. I don't understand how we can just keep piling in. Last year it was another $600 or $800 that was added to the mix. And I understand Senator Anderson talking about the students that are there that need help. If that's the case, then fine. I'm not saying that they don't need the money they have, but the inequities, if we only got so much to deal with, then my student that has the same identical problems in Owatonna shouldn't get shortchanged by $5,000 per student. Anyway, well, thank you.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. And thank you, Senator Anderson and Senator Day, for both of those viewpoints. And we have heard this over and over again every year. And I kick myself every time after this education bill that I don't stand up and say something about this disparity issue. I go home and we talk about it. And it's very troubling, and I want to make this very clear to everybody in this chamber, that the problems with the kids up here, and they're getting $100,000 more per classroom, their problems are no more than the problems that we are having out in Greater Minnesota. If you don't know this yet, you know it now, that the fabric of the family institution is changing. And the little school districts are getting some really troubled families that are split apart. These kids have issues, and they're just maybe in a smaller scale, but we have a very high free and reduced lunch. Most of my school districts are well over 50% in free and reduced lunches. And we have the language barriers, and we have the disparity on all fronts. And it is very frustrating to go back home and say, kids, you get less than the metro school districts because your problems are less. And that's basically what we're saying. Your problems don't mean as much. It's very troubling that we send this signal. Now, of course, we have some wonderful teachers in this state. We have wonderful school districts that make up the difference here. And they do a good job. And maybe it's in the economy or the scale of these school districts. They can concentrate more on these kids. But they need to get the same amount of money. It's only fair. And we talk about this over and over again. So, Senator Day, I understand your frustration. Every one of you legislators from Greater Minnesota should feel this same frustration.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam President. Just really briefly, I just want to make sure my point was clear, that I think most of the extra money that we're talking about goes to kids with special needs. And that's true whether it's in St. Paul or Fairmont, that those kids get the extra money. And really what we should be comparing is the kids that don't have special needs around the state, because I think they are being treated fairly. And that's really my point. My kids are being treated like your kids were, Senator Rosen, in school, because they didn't have special needs. And so we need to find a way to get more education support for all of those kids. And it's hard to do that in a year like this. But I think it's important to recognize that if we change these formulas around, we're just going to hurt those kids that have those special needs wherever they happen to be.
The Secretary will take the roll on the 8-5. Senator Vanderveer.
Oh, Madam President, Senator Anderson, we're not doing what you're saying we're doing. What this bill does that you're bringing forward is cut education in my district 2.8%. It cuts education in your district 1.5%. This just tries to even it out. It doesn't get it even. But you're cutting my district twice the rate that you're cutting yours. We're just asking for a simple, fair, more fair reduction.
Thank you for the spirited debate. The Secretary will take the roll on the A50 amendment. All members having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 30 ayes and 36 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Any further discussion on the bill?
Madam President.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam President. I just have a question to Senator Stumpf, if he'd be willing to answer it.
He will yield.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Stumpf, I just wanted to ask... In previous years when we've had to deal with a shortage of funds, one of the approaches that has been used is to do what is called the shift, and I don't want to get into the details of describing that. People in the Education Committee probably know, but essentially what it does is delay payments from the state to local school districts, allows us the state to preserve the funding structure essentially without... doing great damage to it, and I'm just wanting to know why that approach was not adopted in your bill.
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Hand, and members. You're correct that there is no shift of payments to or delays in payments to school districts in this bill, and there is no shift of the property tax recognition basically the shifts that we had used in the past. The approach that we took, and this was a decision on the part of the majority caucus, that we wanted to put forward a budget that was structurally sound and that dealt with the balancing of that budget in a way that we sent a clear message out to our schools. If I could just step back and say that definitely the use of the shift has been something we've used in the past, but I think the use of the shift is also something that can be easily abused and give people a false sense of hope that by just simply shifting, it solves the budget, and that it does not do. And it's very similar to borrowing, and as you know, the governor's budget had both the shift and borrowing involved as part of his budget package. Obviously, as this proposal gets into conference committee and the discussions with the governor, however that end results come out will be determined by negotiations and agreements. But I really think that we need to somehow come to grasp with the severity of the budget deficit that we have, either by recognizing that there has to be significant reductions or significant reductions and new revenues or a combination of those plus
some use of the shift. But in this proposal that you have before you, it does not use the shift, either the payment shift, delay in payments, or the recognition, property tax recognition shift.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Senator Stumpf. I just wanted to make that clear. I guess for me, I don't know that there's much difference. I appreciate the argument that using a shift is a one-time way to solve a budget problem, but so is the federal money that's in this bill. It doesn't solve the problem. And I just want to remind members that this bill has real problems to it. We are cutting a significant amount of money per pupil. I remember in 2003 when we had a similar budget deficit and we had a education bill that tried to hold the spending flat, and there was a great deal of angst about that, and there was a great deal of talk about the cost that was going to impose on local schools. And there is a very dramatic cost being imposed on local schools by this budget. And the federal dollars that are there, to the extent that they're available, and I think as Senator Anderson pointed out, we're not sure that they are going to be available to offset the general fund dollars. But I know in the school district I represent, it would require about the elimination of 140 teachers to compensate for the loss of funding. I remember in 2003, that was one of the points that Senator Cohen was making on the floor, is that the budget bill that we were adopting was going to have some impact on local schools, and he even read off some of the results that he thought would accrue to local schools. Well, in St. Paul, with the federal money, assuming it all goes to pay to the general fund, it would still result in the layoff of about 200 teachers. If that federal money couldn't be applied to the general fund, it would be almost 1,000 teachers in St. Paul that would have to be laid off as a result of the reduction in per pupil funding. So this is the fundamental flaw, members of this bill. Dramatic reductions in per pupil funding, no way to compensate for that after this next budget period, and there's no way for local schools to deal with that except to lay off staff. None. And I know that there's been talk about there's some other money that comes in through directly to school districts, but we don't know what that is. We don't know how much that's going to mitigate their problems. I don't think any of it will be allowed to be used to pay salaries of and benefits of employees. This is the problem, and we've got this structural problem in education. We do not have the tools available for school districts to manage through variations in funding. We had a few amendments that tried to get at that. Those were all rejected. And so I think the point is very clear to the people of Minnesota. This is a budget that is going to be very, very draconian in its impact, and we're not going to provide any tools for local school districts to be able to manage through this but one. And that one is that people will have to be laid off, and class sizes will have to go up, and programs will have to be cut. And let's be very clear that that's what this is about, and that's the choice that we're making, and I, for one, am not going to support it. Thank you.
Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Madam President. Well, members, here we are. It's the second week of April, and Easter is almost upon us. We're starting to engage on the budget, and here it comes. So while Minnesotans are looking over their shoulder, worried about their jobs, more layoffs, more closings, while our retirement accounts continue to shrink, our houses are worth less, the budget that is coming before the Senate raises taxes, not just $1 billion, $2 billion. So we're going to raise taxes, and we're going to turn around, and we're going to give less to our schools. We're going to raise taxes billions of dollars, and we're going to give less to our schools, to our students, to our teachers. How does that make sense? How does that make any sense, members? Our proposition to the rest of the country and the world can't be, come to Minnesota. We're going to raise the cost of you having a family here. We're going to raise the cost of doing business, but we're going to do less and less for our schools. I don't think that reflects the Minnesota Senate's priorities, but here we have it today. We've got the words. We've got the numbers. A 7% across the board cut, so we're not stepping up to the plate. We're not setting priorities. We're not making hard choices and decisions here. This is a meat cleaver.
across the board. Madam President, the House would not pass this bill. The governor would not accept this bill. And we've only got 6 more weeks to go. So I do thank Senator Stump for the process he's engaged in. But the product, I think, is a lousy message for Minnesota schools and families.
The Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 1328, a bill for an act relating to education, providing for policy and funding for early childhood, family, adult, and pre-kindergarten through grade 12 education, including general education.
The Secretary will take the roll on final passage. All members having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 37 ayes and 29 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to, I think. Senator Pogomil, is that?
Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 1328 be laid on the table.
On Senator Pogomil's motion, all in favor, please say aye. 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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Pogomiller.
Madam Chair, I move that House File 855, the bonding bill, be taken from the table.
On that motion, all in favor, please say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Pogomiller.
Madam President, I move that an urgency be declared within the meaning of Article 4, Section 19 of the Constitution of Minnesota with House File 855, and that the rules of the Senate be so far suspended as to give House File 855 its second and third reading and place it on its final passage.
On that motion, all in favor? And Senator Pogomiller, this is the bonding bill? Yes. Okay. On the motion, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Second reading.
House File 855.
Second reading. Now what? And then Senator Langseth.
Madam President, I move to amend House File number 855 as follows. Delete everything after the enacting clause and delete the title of House File number 855 and insert the language after the enacting clause and the title of Senate File number 781, the third engrossment.
Senator Langseth, will you tell us kind of what we're doing here?
Madam President, members, this is the bonding bill that did pass on general orders earlier. There's been no change in it. We'll be sending this over to the House.
Okay. Any discussion on Senator Langseth's motion? Seeing none. Senator Pogomiller? Oh. Oh, we have to adopt the amendment. That's right. I'm sorry. On Senator Langseth's motion, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Now third reading?
The Secretary will give the bill the third reading.
House File 855, a bill for an act relating to capital improvements, authorizing spending to acquire and better public land and buildings and other improvements of a capital nature with certain conditions.
The Secretary will take the roll of final passage. All members having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 57 ayes and 9 nays, the bill is passed and is title agreed to. There. Senator Pogomiller.
Mr. President, members, I've just visited with Senator Senjum. We have 3 or 4 bills on the calendar. I think if we waived the layovers, we could clear that off. I don't think there's anything on there that people think is overly controversial. So I would move, Madam Chair, to take up the calendar under motions.
On that motion?
And to waive the layovers.
On Senator Pogomiller's motion, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Pogomiller? Then what? I don't have it. Do we have a copy of the calendar? There isn't. He's getting it. Members, the first bill that we will address on the calendar is Senate File Number 3, number 1 on the calendar, and the author is Senator Berglund. Third reading.
Senate File Number 3, a bill for an act relating to mandates, eliminating unnecessary state mandates, etc.
Secretary will take the roll on final passage. Russo and Jen. Yeah, it's Pariseau and Olson. I don't think they know they're not home. Okay. The secretary, all members having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 56 ayes and 10 nays, the bill is passed and the title agreed to. The second bill on the calendar is Senate File 1486, number 2 on the calendar. And the secretary will give the bill the third reading.
Senate File 1486, a bill for enacting relating to solid waste, amending reporting requirements for manufacturers and retailers of video display devices.
The secretary will take the roll. The secretary will. All senators having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and the title agreed to. The third bill on the calendar is Senate File 462, and the author is Senator Latz. The secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 462, a bill for an act relating to public safety, expanding the current DWI ignition interlock device pilot program by 2 years and applying it statewide.
The secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 62 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and the title agreed to. The last item on the calendar is Senate File 489. The author is Senator Clark. The secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 489, a bill for an act relating to reverse mortgages, eliminating the requirement that a reverse mortgage becomes due when committed principal has been fully paid, etc.
The secretary will take the roll. All members having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and 2 nays, the bill is passed and the title agreed to. We will revert to the addendum. The second order of business, executive and official communications. And they are on the addendum and referred as indicated. Then the next item is the reports of committees. Senator Pogemiller.
Madam President, I move that the reports of the committees printed in the addendum be now adopted.
On that motion, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Pogomiller. The next item is the second reading of Senate bills. They are on the addendum. Second reading.
Now what?
Senator Pogomiller?
Madam President, is there any other work at the desk?
There is no other work at the desk.
Then I think announcements would be in order. Members, we're going to meet. We're going to recess now only to wait for the report back from the House on the conference committee on bonding so that we could get that conference committee appointed. So there'll be no other votes today, but we will come back on Tuesday, April 14th at 12 noon. So I would hold for announcements. Committees probably are meeting. They want to announce their starting time today.
Thank you. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Madam President. The Transportation Committee will meet 15 minutes after adjournment. Members, we got a long schedule. We're going to go fast. We have to be done by 2:30.
Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Madam President. Environment, Natural Resources, Energy, Finance will meet 107 at 1:30.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam President. The Senate Higher Education Committee will meet at 1:20. We're going to be going through our omnibus bill, so members, please try to get there on time.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, the Health and Human Services Budget Division will meet at 3 p.m. in room 123.
Senator Scheid.
The Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee will meet at 1:30. Please be there on time. We can get this done. Thanks.
And Senator Coring is excused today from 11 o'clock to the end of session. Senator Cohen from 1 o'clock to the end of session. Any other announcements? Senator Pogomiller.
So again, members, we're only recessing to take the conference committee appointment from the House on the bonding bill, so there's no other work in the Senate today other than that. And then we will come back on April 14th at 12 noon. Enjoy your couple days with your families. So I'd move that the Senate recess.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam President. Just as a point of personal privilege, I would like to take this opportunity to congratulate the Bemidji Beavers hockey team who will be playing in the Frozen Four. The NCAA tournament this Thursday will be their first game at 4 o'clock in the afternoon for any of you who are interested in watching. Thank you.
Thank you. On Senator Pogomiller's motion to stand in recess.
Recess to the call of the chair.
To the call of the chair. On Senator Pogomiller's motion, all in favor, please say aye. Aye. Opposed? We are in recess.
Senate will come to order. Messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate files here with return. Senate file numbers 451, 743, 811, is there one? And 896, signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House. And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File 855, Bill for an Act relating to capital improvements, authorizing spending to acquire and better public land and buildings and other improvements of a capital nature. The House respectfully requests that a conference committee of 5 members be appointed thereon. Representatives Hausman, Scalzi, Wagenius, Rukavina, and House have been appointed as such committee on the part of the House. House File 855 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with the request that the Senate appoint a like committee. Signed, Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Pogomiller.
Ms. President, I'd like to have a brief recess for the purpose of appointing a conference committee. Ms. President, on behalf of Senator Langseth, I'd like to move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File 855, and that a conference committee of 5 members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
Okay, on the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Now.
Now, Mr. President, I'd like a brief recess for purposes of appointing a conference committee.
Senator Pogue-Miller moves for recess. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The Senate stands at recess. Come to order. Senator Pogue-Miller.
Mr. President, is there a privilege report at the desk?
There's a privilege report at the desk.
Senator Pogue-Miller from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends that the following senators be and they hereby are appointed as a conference committee on House File 855, Senators Langseth, Day, Tomasoni, Lynch, and Sieben. Senator Pogue-Miller moves the foregoing appointments be approved.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. See, we're going to now make an announcement from the podium here that Senator said you've got a brand new suit, a tie, and a blue shirt. I hope the camera's on. You really, really look handsome again today. Senator Pogue-Miller, happy holidays.
Mr. President, I think most of the Senate did notice that today, that Senator Senjum looked Alfred Dapper. And
well, he doesn't look that good, but no, he does.
Mr. President, I move the Senate adjourn till Tuesday, April 14th, 12 noon.
On the motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senate stands adjourned.